here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I'm Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
On this week's show, we'll be joined by Martin Kremenstein, a senior managing director at Nuveen, to discuss an interesting strategy for investing in companies that promote sustainability and ethics.
Nuveen is a leading asset manager with $948 billion in assets under management at the end of September. The company also heads up its own ETF business, NuShares.
Our guest Martin is the head of NuShares. Together, we chatted about the company's environmental, social, and governance ETFs to get a better understanding of Nuveen's approach to ESG investing and why this might be an interesting strategy for the modern investing world.
Check it out. Hi, Martin. Thank you for joining us today. We want to start things off with the basics. Can you explain what parameters a company has to meet in order to be considered for inclusion in the Nuveen ESG ETFs?
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me here. So we approach ESG, I think, a little differently from how people have traditionally thought of ESG investing. It's not so much around excluding companies or including them. It's about scoring them according to various ESG criteria, and then selecting the best in class within a sector in order to build a kind of a full portfolio or a full exposure that has the best possible ESG score. So, for example, we do exclude certain companies. So companies that are involved in alcohol, tobacco, and gambling, weapons and firearms, nuclear power, and then in our emerging markets portfolio, we also have an exclusion around companies that do business with Sudan. But then beyond that, what we're doing is we're taking various environmental, social, governance criteria, and then also controversies, and scoring them according to those criteria. So under environmental, it's around climate change, natural resource usage, and waste management. Under social, it's around health and safety, labor management, product safety and quality. For governance, it's around board structure, accountability and transparency, business ethics. And then controversies around, you know, environment, customers, human rights and community, labor rights and supply chain, and governance. And so each company is scored according to those, and then also they get an absolute ESG score, and then they get a momentum score, which is based on the improvement they have made on each of those criteria. And so each company then ends up with an ESG score. So what we then do is within each GICS sector, we take the highest scoring company, then the next highest scoring company, and so on until the total market cap reaches 50% of the sector's market cap from the base index from where we started. So, for example, we start with MSCI large cap value. We take in each sector, say telecoms, the highest scoring telecoms company, then the second highest, et cetera, until we get to 50% of the market cap of the non-ESG MSCI US large cap value. And then that is our allocation for telecoms within the ESG large cap value index. And so that's how we do it. So what we're trying to do is really give you a full exposure to large cap value, for example, with the good solid sector allocations, but still giving you the best ESG score possible within that allocation. The next thing we do is we apply a carbon screen based around absolute carbon emissions, carbon intensity, and future carbon emissions. And so the idea then is to screen out companies with very, very high carbon footprints to then lower the carbon footprint of that sector. We also remove any companies, as the final round of exclusion is any companies with fossil fuel reserves. So that really comes into place in energy. And what that will do is that will give us a midstream bias because we removed any kind of producers from that sector. And then finally, we then optimize back to, again, the non-ESG parent for the sector weights and for the country weights for the international products. And so really our idea is to bring you ESG, but with the same or similar risk characteristics as a non-ESG parent from which we started.
So why did Nuveen decide to offer products focused on corporate governance, environmental impact, and positive social outcomes? So in other words, have you identified a market-beating investment strategy here? Or are your ESG ETFs more a product of demand from interested investors?
Well, so ESG is really something that goes to the heart of Nuveen as an asset manager. Our parent company, TIA, was one of the drafters of the UN's Principles of Responsible Investing. I think overall we manage close to $600 billion according to the UN's PRI. We've been running client money in ESG accounts since 1990 and in mutual funds since 1999. So this is something we've been doing for a really, really long time. And we have a view on ESG that it has to work from an investment perspective, which is why we moved away from traditional exclusionary ESG, which led to somewhat fair kind of criticisms that ESG had historically led to underperformance, and moved towards a best-in-class ESG approach so you can approach the or get to the same kind of returns that you'd get from not incorporating ESG. But it then would allow an investor or an advisor running money for an investor to align their portfolio and their full portfolio to their underlying values. But if you look at the actual criteria that we're scoring on, so climate change, natural resource usage, and waste management under environmental, well, that just sounds like efficiency and efficient use of resources. And I think you wouldn't really complain about looking for companies that are run efficiently. Under social health and safety, labor management, product safety and quality, well, here you're looking at companies that are probably less likely to have issues with regulators, less issues with labor partners and unions, and less likely to have to do product recalls and, you know, less risk of class action lawsuits. Look at governance. When governance speaks for itself, you want a good board structure, you want accountability and transparency, you want good business ethics. So you look at the criteria, and they look to me like non-financial quality factors. And so we look at it as a way, really, of, you know, another way to look at companies that isn't just purely balance sheet focused. And I'll give you an example of how ESG can really improve the portfolio composition. MSCI recently put out a press release noting that Equifax had been removed from its ESG Leaders Index, I think sometime last year, over data security issues. And they've had similar kind of early warning wins on companies like Volkswagen as well. So it really, you know, it can actually prove to be, I think, long-term, something that's good for the portfolio. And our belief is, like, we are, I think, as an organization, a little bit evangelical about ESG, but we believe it's only going to really get out there and be adopted by everybody or the majority of the population once it's shown that it can work. So we're all about ESG being economically viable and working as an investment.
Certainly interesting in the Equifax situation that there was an almost an ESG-based warning sign a while ago before this very public chaos that has gone down over the last few months. I want to shift kind of to the public reaction to this strategy. How have people responded to the way Nuveen approaches ESG? And kind of along that same framework, what type of feedback are you seeing in terms of what is driving interest in your ESG ETFs?
Sure, yeah, that's a very good question. So I've been out and about traveling with our salespeople, talking to investment advisors across the country. And you know, with a few geographical exceptions in general, I've yet to meet an advisor that hasn't had a client come to them and ask them to incorporate ESG. Sometimes it's the client, sometimes and more regularly it's the client's children when they're doing succession planning. And so I think a lot of financial advisors have struggled to accommodate that request from their clients. You know, prior to us building out our platform of product, it was very hard to find large cap value ESG products because it's standard ESG that would like to strip out the lowest performing companies, the kind of the exclusionary one, or that tended to remove, you know, utilities and energy, which are real staples of value portfolios. So, you know, by giving investors and advisors large cap value, giving them a very, very high quality small cap option, there weren't that many small cap options, and the performance has not been great on a lot of them. And then also by giving them mid cap options, which were, I think, missing as well. And then finally, an aggregate bond option. Now, an advisor can either build a full portfolio with our 8 ESG products, you know, the 5 domestic equities, the 2 international ones, and the core fixed income product, or they can take their favorite active ESG managers and then use our ETFs to reload the asset allocations back to where their actual asset allocation view is. You know, so I think we're seeing a lot of investors and advisors taking a long, hard look at this. We've seen decent flow, particularly as the fourth quarter has started into the products. And we've got a lot of very, very favorable reaction from both advisors that are very, very focused on ESG and those that aren't, but whose clients are asking them to start to look at it.
Martin, have you found that companies who meet the criteria needed for inclusion in an ESG ETF have intentionally and or maybe publicly defined their company as a value-based organization, or is it possible that one could qualify for inclusion simply by coincidence?
Well, the companies that have qualified have almost invariably qualified by coincidence. If you look at our large cap growth product, we have, you know, companies like Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, PepsiCo in there. These are just within their sectors, the better performing ones. I think larger companies are able to manage their efficiency. I think, you know, the bigger the company, the more it makes sense for them to start to become more efficient. the bigger the company, the more eyes are upon them regarding board and accountability and regarding labor relations and product. So it does, I think, higher ESG scores have a tendency to skew towards large cap. And I think we've seen that, again, going back to before we launched our product, that most products out there were large cap growth. I explained why growth, why large cap. They tend to have better reporting on ESG, and they tend to be more incentivized to kind of incorporate ESG, ameliorate their ESG issues. So I think, you know, either we haven't seen that many companies that have intentionally tried to be ESG. What we're trying to do is you know, go back to that kind of nudge thing whereby you can encourage better behavior by having small incentives. And, you know, the more money that goes into ESG, the more it will be in a company's to a company's benefit to score more highly on ESG criteria so they would qualify for inclusion in an ESG fund. So I think we're at the beginning stages of that, maybe that change in how companies are viewing ESG on a kind of a wholesale view.
Along these same lines of what kind of companies pop up in these ESG ETFs, do you see any industry skew in play at all? So in other words, are there industries that are inherently more conducive to value-based management than others? And are there certain sectors that simply have no representation in the ESG ETFs?
We've been very deliberate in making sure that there isn't that skew. So our view is that, all right, so the two worst scoring ESG sectors tend to be energy and utilities. We make sure they are represented because they're represented in a non-ESG universe, and we want our risk characteristics to be the same. So I think when you look at other products that are just excluding or are not looking to kind of build a risk equivalent exposure, then you do get certain sectors that are, you know, kind of have a halo over them. We are very deliberately trying to avoid that because we want to give the same risk exposure as you would get, or similar risk exposure as you'd get from not applying the ESG overlay.
All right. So now we want to give our listeners a better idea of how to incorporate these ETFs into their own investing strategies. How should investor and advisors think about incorporating ESG ETFs into their broader portfolio? And is it possible for investors to build a diversified ESG portfolio?
So I think in answer to the second question first, yeah, absolutely. Now that we have, you know, large value, large growth, mid value, small cap, emerging markets, developed markets, and then core fixed income, you can build a very good diversified portfolio using our ESG ETFs. So you can bring ESG to the core of your portfolio construction process. You don't have to have an allocation to ESG. You can bring it in entirely. And I think that's how we've envisioned investors and advisors using our products when we launch them. But as I said, you can then say, if you like using active managers, you can say, all right, well, I'll take this active manager. I know it's going to skew me large growth. I'm going to use the, you know, mid-value, small caps, and large value to bring down my cap size bias, and also might take me away from a growth bias more towards a value bias if that's what I want. So that's how we see investors using these products. You know, they're ETFs. They're very easy to implement in a portfolio. You trade it, you know, much like you would an equity. And so we see it as essentially trying to make it as easy as possible for investors and advisors to incorporate ESG into that portfolio construction process.
Well, Martin, I think that just about does it for us today. We like to give our listeners kind of exposure to a lot of different ideas and perspectives on investing and trading. And I think this certainly is one that fits in the modern world. So thanks again for joining us. We really appreciated your insight.
Thank you very much for having me.